Hi there. Good morning, or good afternoon, friends, depending on when you guys are listening. This is Woodruff and Strauss. Thank you for tuning in to our little podcast. I'm Betsy Woodruff with The Daily Beast. I'm here with my dear friend Daniel Strauss of Politico, and we are going to talk about three super interesting things today. We're going to talk about abortion, Black Lives Matter, and the Confederacy. No, just
Light
kidding.
fare. Nothing
Light
too heavy.
fare, just fun little conversation topics. Any preface you'd like to add to this, Daniel? You're ready to dive on in.
I'm ready to dive on in.
Awesome.
There is more out there than Donald Trump, and
Oh, I know.
we are
I
interested
know.
in that.
We're just living in fantasy East Coast Acela Corridor land where people
It's
don't talk
like,
about Donald Trump all day, every
oh, well,
day.
we should talk about the debate too, because we haven't had an episode since,
Do we
I mean, I
have
don't know what to,
to? Do
okay.
we have
There were
to?
two debates, Betsy.
Oh,
All right, let's get to
man.
Chris McDaniel, who
Okay.
I wrote about a lot when I was at Talking Points Memo. Chris
Awesome.
McDaniel is a state senator who ran an insurrectionist campaign against Senator Thad Cochran in Mississippi. McDaniel got
In the Republican
super,
primary.
super close to winning. He was
Yes.
backed by a lot of conservative advocates and outside groups. And then he got to a runoff with Thad Cochran. And then things got a little weird. There were two break-ins, one of a McDaniel blogger who supported him, who broke into Senator Cochran's late wife's house, nursing home to take a picture of her for an anti-Cochran ad. And then later, some McDaniel staffers ended up locked in a courthouse with ballots.
It was just a wild ride from
it was
start to
a
finish.
fancy, wild ride.
So the reason we're talking about Chris
Yes,
McDaniel.
sorry. The reason we're talking about Chris McDaniel is because the Senator Ted Cruz's campaign yesterday just named him as the co-chairman for Mississippi. Which is also interesting because
Buckle up,
McDaniel was not
y'all.
officially endorsed by Cruz in the 2014 cycle, but Cruz said some very nice things, which got about as close to an endorsement as possible.
Over the course of my reporting, I always heard rumors Cruz was going to endorse him,
I
but
mean,
Cruz camp never confirmed that. Cruz never did. There was always a sense that like McDaniel's supporters and Cruz's supporters loved each other, were simpatico. But publicly, Cruz did not come out and endorse McDaniel. And I think what's interesting about that race too, and why it's such a big deal that Cruz has McDaniel as his Mississippi co-chair, is that that race really highlighted the enormous and jagged divide between conservative activists and Republican Party leadership in DC.
Yes.
There weren't many elections where you actually, many races where you actually saw those two forces lining up against each other and sort of duking it out in a really ugly and public way. The Mississippi Senate race was really the only one. And to be fair, in my opinion, that race was kind of conservatives for the taking. Thad Cochran is very old, was not an energetic campaigner, polled quite poorly for most of the contest, while Chris McDaniel is sort of this young, dashing, energetic, fire-breathing
He's very
conservative.
charismatic,
Yeah,
and
really
yeah.
galvanized the base, raised a lot of money. But then, kind of at the last minute, it all imploded and Cochran won. And
Chris
one
McDaniel
thing.
has, I check me on this, but I'm pretty sure, because I still follow him on Facebook, Chris McDaniel has not conceded the Mississippi Senate
Are
race.
you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
So McDaniel, in the end,
That's
his problem, he
amazing.
argued, so it went to a runoff, and McDaniel argued that, wait, I gotta share with the viewers,
I'm
Betsy.
sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
McDaniel argued that
I have to text my editor about this. Keep going.
Chris
Carry on. I'm listening.
McDaniel, Cochran ended up pulling out winning the runoff because because he his campaign so went out and looked to African American voters and Democratic voters in Mississippi to try and buoy him in the end. McDaniel maintained and waged a legal battle against this that that was cheating, essentially, that Chris McDaniel was actually the conservative Republican nominee, and Cochran only won because of foul play. So there we go. And we should also note that the reason it was such a big deal that if Ted Cruz would have endorsed McDaniel is because Cruz was an NRSC vice chair. I think he still is.
And the NRSC is the National Republican Senatorial Committee. It's the branch of the Republican Party responsible for beating Democrats, for winning open seats for Republicans, and for protecting Republican incumbents. Right. So if Cruz, as a member of the NRSC, was actually trying to defeat a Republican incumbent, it would be the same as if Cruz endorsed a Democrat who was running against a Senate Republican.
Pretty much.
It's not done. Right. So Cruz didn't do it. And Cruz didn't do it.
It would be like Joe Biden, or it would be like President Obama. No, well, that might happen. Actually.
There's like not even an analogy. It would be like if Obama and if Larry Lessig ran as a third party candidate
and
Harry Reid endorsed him. We'd all be like, what? We'd all just be very, very confused. So the Confederacy link is what? Is that McDaniel at one point?
So, and we did some reporting on this, and Mother Jones did some reporting. Throughout the cycle, McDaniel kept there were these stories that came out of associations with neo-Confederates and Confederates. Mother Jones did the first one.
Oh my gosh.
McDaniel.
Just kidding.
McDaniel appeared at a neo-Confederate rally. And Mother Jones reported that McDaniel denied being at one.
There were flyers. Was that actually a neo-Confederate rally, or was it a rally where there was a booth that sold Confederate merchandise?
No, that was the first one.
Okay.
The second one was at a gun in, wait for it, Guntown, Mississippi, where there was a vendor selling Confederate merchandise.
Okay.
And when TPM started reporting on this, the McDaniel campaign denied it. The vendors did not deny it and say McDaniel was slated to come. They shared a flyer saying Chris McDaniel was there, and that was it. McDaniel later was interviewed. I mean, and so this brought in questions about sort of McDaniel and black people. And in an interview with the Weekly Standard, McDaniel was asked, how are you going to attract black voters? And McDaniel essentially said, I have a long history with this. You know, I used to play basketball when I was a kid. And yeah. So, but in the context of 2016.
It's an interesting point.
That was a point he made. In the context of 2016, what's interesting about this to me is that Cruz is embracing local state party or local state senators who have a flair for the bombastic.
Yeah, flair for controversy. I mean, like this. I feel like this should not surprise us about Cruz, right?
Right.
Cruz is running as the candidate who is despised by Washington every time. A member of the Republican Party leadership, a member of Senate Republican leadership, somebody who wears a nice suit and works at the RNC. Every time one of those guys says something bad about Cruz, it is a point for him. That is what he is running on. It's a legit thing to run on. I mean, you know, anti-Washington sentiment is probably as high as it's ever been. Nobody says, I want a candidate who's good buds with Reince Priebus and Henry Barber. Like, nobody's saying that.
No.
So like, just from a strategic perspective, kind of a no-brainer, not a big surprise, but still, like it's interesting.
It is, and I guess it just
shows like Cruz's total comfort with just blowtorching any and all bridges, which you know, just prerogative.
It's funny. I wonder how this will help him down the line because one of the CWs is that Donald Trump is really bad for Ted Cruz because that's the same sort of body that they're trying to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
Is this sort of the same long-term investment that people read us will be writing about later and saying like this was a long-term brilliant move or something? I just see it because one problem with Donald Trump this entire time is that he hasn't built the state and local infrastructure or the campaign infrastructure that he needs.
That's one of his problems.
That is one of the many problems of Donald Trump's candidacy. Cruz has done that. Cruz has a campaign staff. Jeff Rose's campaign manager, right? And he's bringing in campaign chairs.
Yep.
So down, and he's got money too. So sure. Down the line, it could help. It is, you know, it's a good way to get attention too. And it's, I don't know, maybe down the line, McDaniel will run it. I don't know.
And it's interesting, you know,
it's a good way to get attention. I think it's actually pretty good for Cruz right now. It is the more, so it's unlike a number of candidates who are trying to stay relevant by attacking Trump, Cruz is doing it this way, and I think that might pay off longer.
Agreed.
In the primary.
Next topic,
Marco Rubio and abortion.
Marco Rubio and abortion. So at the Republican debate, the Fox News debate, last Thursday, Rubio said he opposes abortions in all cases, including situations where an abortion can potentially protect the life or health of a mother, situations where the pregnancy is a product of rape or incest. Rubio said, across the board, no questions asked, opposes abortion in all cases. And so here's what's interesting to me about the way Republicans talk about abortion politics, is that, let's be honest, like, this is extremely hypothetical. Roe v. Wade is not getting overturned. You know, it's not going to happen. I don't say that as somebody approaching this from an ideological point of view, but from like a fact point of view. As far as any reasonable person can ascertain, abortion is pretty much always going to be legal in this country. The question of, in a hypothetical universe, if you could ban abortion, under what circumstances would you ban abortion? To me, that conversation, while interesting and telling, is not nearly as interesting as the conversation about the enormous gains and the enormous progress or success that conservatives, Republicans, and pro-life activists have had, and the enormous defeats and setbacks that pro-choice activists and advocates have had on the state level with policies that actually change abortion access, right? It doesn't matter if abortion is legal if you can't get one. Mm. And pro-life activists are very aware of that. So in state after state, they've succeeded in getting 20-week abortion bans passed, in eliminating state funding for Planned Parenthood, in implementing regulations on abortion clinics that are costly or that make it harder for them to operate, make it harder for them to turn a profit, in capping how much Medicare funds abortion clinics can get. I forget if it's Medicare or Medicaid. Is it Medicaid? How much Medicaid funding abortion clinics can get or Planned Parenthoods can get, which makes it harder for them to be profitable or harder even for them to be financially viable. And it's just fascinating to me. And we wrote a piece this morning about Huckabee's comments on abortion. Huckabee said that he could potentially be open to having the National Guard or the FBI shut down abortion clinics because the 14th Amendment protects fetuses' right to life, and they're having their constitutional rights violated. So it would make sense to have the legislature, to have Congress pass a law and the president sign a law, blah, blah, blah. And all of this stuff is like, I mean, you know, are you going to ride your unicorn to the pudding lake or through the candy cane forest? that's seriously what we're talking about. When the really interesting abortion debate that impacts people's lives and impacts people's access to abortion and impacts the profitability and viability and sustainability of abortion providers is something that where Scott Walker is a lot more interested, right? Because Walker signed legislation banning abortions after 20 weeks, no exceptions. He passed budgets that included no state-level funding for Planned Parenthood. His spokeswoman, Laurel Patrick, has indicated that his office would support legislation that would make it very difficult for Planned Parenthoods in Wisconsin to get federal dollars. I spoke with a state representative, Chris Taylor, who's formerly the policy director for Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin, who said that if those policy changes happen, there's a good chance more Planned Parenthoods will close. 5 Planned Parenthoods have already closed in Wisconsin under Scott Walker's watch. Planned Parenthood Wisconsin says none of those clinics actually performed abortions. So it's just interesting to me that so much of the abortion conversation, including the conversation about Rubio, is about what is people's messaging? What is people's rhetoric? You know, what Republican candidate is willing to say he's to the farthest right on abortion? When if you actually look at what Republicans have done with the political power that they have, I don't know that you can find a candidate who has done more than Scott Walker. I don't know that you can. I don't think Jeb signed a 20-week abortion ban. Not that I know of. I don't think so.
He has touted...
He's touted defunding Planned Parenthood. Right. But as far as I could tell, the number of funding he actually cut from Planned Parenthood was something like $124,000.
Yeah.
You know, of a massive budget in an enormous state. Which isn't to say he didn't defund it or that he's not being forthright about that. But the money that we're dealing with is not comparable to the money in Wisconsin. Who else? I would have to look at Huckabee's record on abortion in Arkansas, but I doubt it's as impressive because he was working with the Democratic legislature. Christie obviously isn't going to be as impressive. He's having to work with the Democratic legislature.
Kasich is in there. I don't know where Kasich is on abortion.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure. But even given all that, it would be hard for them to have a record of doing more to cut funding to abortion providers and to implement tougher regulations on abortion providers, and also to limit the window of time in which women could get abortions. It's hard to go any further on that than Scott Walker did. I mean, the other contender would be Rick Perry, who's probably about the same.
Right.
It's just interesting to me. It's just interesting to me when we talk about abortion, we're talking about Rubio instead of talking about Walker.
Right. Well.
I just think it's interesting.
I mean, Walker wants to talk about that. That's one of the things that Walker wants to talk about. I think
he should want to talk about it. Rubio's, I mean, it's an issue where his track record is very impressive to the Republican base.
Right. So with someone like Rubio or a senator, how do you gauge where they are? And like, how do we measure? Because the question, how do we measure where they are on abortion? Because the question that was asked was something like,
would you really make a woman die rather than let her get an abortion? It was something like that, which is an amazing question at a Fox News debate. That was great.
And the follow up report said that in the Florida State House, Rubio pushed supported legislation that included exceptions for rape and incest.
So that's another interesting thing is this question of do you allow exceptions for rape and incest? Because in Georgia and also in Wisconsin, I believe, that's been a little controversial because you have some personhood pro-life groups that think any legislation that does include an exception for rape and incest is worse than not passing the legislation at all.
Right.
Because then you're, which this is an argument that I have a lot of trouble following. And these groups have basically no credibility among mainstream conservative activists, Republican Party leaders, like, not really taken seriously.
Right.
So the question is, so people have their ideal policies they would like to see implemented, and then people also have the compromises they'll push for to get things passed. So I don't think it's a flip-flop for Rubio to say he thinks abortion ought to be legal in all cases, but also for him to say he supports legislation that is passable.
Mm-hmm.
I think settling for what is politically realistic does not make you a flip-flopper.
I'm really into this question. So why do you think? I mean, because I you've got me here, Betsy. I don't know why we don't talk. I mean, I guess
I don't know.
You can,
I have no idea.
Say,
I'm baffled.
You can at least direct attention and say we need to push state legislatures to do what they did in, say, Wisconsin or in these other states here. I guess that, I don't know. I just feel like the larger question. I'm sorry. What does it mean for 2016? Well, now it's appropriate time to.
What about Trump? What does Trump say about this? I'm just kidding.
Okay. I mean, I think he's busy. Oh my gosh. Oh, Donald Trump.
It's okay. It's okay.
The Democrats' dream candidate. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think you're right, and this is sort of an advantage for conservative governors running for president here over senators
who
have to deal with the state legislature and have to answer to a more diverse electorate.
Walker had to answer to a pretty diverse electorate, at least an ideologically and politically diverse electorate.
Okay, I'll give you that. But I mean a larger electorate and a larger sort of media scene, yeah. Right? I mean, a senator has to answer to the national press. Mm-hmm. Someone like Walker has local press. Now, granted, Wisconsin's press corps is very aggressive.
Yeah, they're good.
Very good. But to me, in most cases, maybe Walker is the exception here. It seems like this would be an advantage for, or an advantage, advantageous subject for governors rather than senators.
I would think so, similarly.
Okay.
I agree.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to phrase that the right way because I've been reading the comments.
I just think it's weird that we talk about the abortion debate in terms of hypotheticals and what you would do in your imaginary world rather than talking about it in terms of, you know, the clinics that have closed down in Wisconsin and the 20-week ban that has been implemented, who is that affected? And, you know, what happens when if these states go further to limit federal dollars, taxpayer dollars that are available to abortion providers. I think that is a way, 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 way more interesting story than in what fantasy land, at what point do you ban what kind of, like, whatever. I just think it's more interesting.
How helpful do you think it was, the 2014 election cycle was for state legislatures and the opponents of pro-choice advocates?
Super helpful. They did great.
Because of guys like Cory Gardner, who sort of led the vanguard to a smashing Republican victory, a wave election.
Yeah, I mean, Republicans picked up even more state legislative chambers. 2010 was huge as far as Republicans picking up state legislative chambers. 2012, they did well. 2014, they still did well. I mean, they have the number of state legislative chambers Republicans control has grown steadily over the last three election cycles. Nothing but good news.
Well, I mean, yeah, I can't see.
And people are like, oh, Herbity Derp, let's ask Marco Rubio hypothetical questions about, I don't know, whatever.
Hey, whatever. You know, Rick Santorum loves these questions. He loves being talk about the hypotheticals on this. But, like, granted, Rubio's doing much better and is a far more viable candidate in most polling than Rick Santorum right now.
A little bit.
He has more money. He's pulling better.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Taken seriously by the national press.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. That's my how we write about abortion rant. End rant.
Next we're going to the Democratic side now.
And next over the weekend. Thing. Yeah. Let's talk about over, Bernie
I'll,
Sanders.
I'll take this one.
All right.
Over the weekend, for the second time, a Bernie Sanders event was disrupted by protesters claiming association with the Black Lives Matter movement. This originally happened in Arizona a day after we taped an episode, Betsy, and our handler, the managing editor, Aria, was like, man, I wish we could have done it the day after this. Whatever.
Sorry, Aria.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, Aria.
Bummer.
So, this time, again, the Black Lives Matter protesters, and Black Lives Matter is a movement that advocates for racial justice and sort of more attention to problems in the black community, like police brutality. This time, they totally shut down Sanders' speech at a Social Security Works event. This has been annoying Sanders. He was visibly annoyed. I mean, like,
you think it annoys him?
I think it... he's not happy about it, you know? At the Arizona at Networks Nation, when Black Lives Matter protesters shut down or disrupted a candidate forum featuring Martin O'Malley and Sanders, at the end got very persnickety. He said, you know, I've been a civil rights advocate for something like 50 years, as he says.
50 years.
50 years.
That's good. That's good.
At the end, he said, I'll try and do you don't want me here? Fine. I can't. I lost it.
That's good. That's good.
You know, in his very Brooklyn sort of accent. And, you know, one of our senior magazine writers here points out that, like, Sanders does have a history in Chicago. He definitely was involved in sit-ins and protests of this stuff. But that is not good enough for the Black Lives Matter movement activists. And the reason that Sanders is so appealing is that he's drawing huge, or as Donald would say, huge crowds.
Huge crowds. Very huge classy crowds.
Classiest crowds
greatest
ever.
Crowds rated. In the world.
Very bad. Not like Hillary Clinton's crowds, which are very bad. They're very, very bad. No one
my
gets
favorite
me.
Is just the, this is his face all the time.
Never mind. I, yeah.
Let's say it's screenshotted and I'm going to
yeah,
be
I,
it sad does. About it for the rest of my life. Anyway.
Yeah. Wonderful. I, on a daily basis, I think my career is going to be over. So, the appeal is that, and the other thing is that Sanders is the most liberal candidate in the race, the most legitimate.
Right. No one debates that.
There's no one to the left of Sanders. So, ideally, according to activists and members of the movement, they should, you know, Sanders should be incorporating this into his platform. Personally, Betsy, I think that Sanders was taken a little aback by just how well he's done, and he's being pushed from sort of a single area or single issue candidate, which he's not really a single issue candidate.
Kind of like a two issue candidate.
Right.
Yeah.
To a candidate that's being questioned on a whole host of positions. To be fair, Sanders has actually taken a lot of great pains on this. It's just not being attended. I mean, the activists I talked to yesterday for a story I wrote on this said, it's great if you hire staffers. It's great if you hire an African-American outreach director, which he's done. It's great if you unveil a criminal justice reform platform, but you need to talk about this more in his speeches. And I don't think Sanders really expected he would have to do that very much. I think most of his campaign, he thought he would be hammering Hillary.
It's almost like people care about things other than TPP and campaign finance reform. It's almost like people care about other stuff, too.
I don't know. When I pitch my editors on TPP or campaign finance reform, that's when they light up. That's really not the
cartoon hearts shooting out of their eyes.
It's a great way to turn everyone off in a editorial meeting. All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's it. It's a little weird because I have written some about the right and issues on the right, like Common Core, that really rev up the base.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a natural base issue. This is a thing within the Democratic Party that is...
That Democrats historically have not been great on.
Right.
Like...
This is... so. And
it's not something where Democrats can say, on criminal justice reform and policing reform, we're on the right side of history and Republicans are on the wrong side of history. It's not an issue that either side can really capitalize on for partisan talking points.
Right.
So, and you know, there's not like a pre-made book of smart things candidates can say about this stuff to appeal to different groups. It's kind of uncharted territory, and people haven't spent their entire careers practicing talking about it, which is cool and which is really nice because you don't get as many nonsense argle bargle talking points. And because people, reporters and activists are thinking about it sort of more clearly and, are able to approach it without sort of, pre-made questions or pre-made areas of concern. And I think that, as a reporter, that excites me. I think it's going to make it a really fun thing to cover. You have Hillary Clinton in the 90s lobbied for Bill Clinton's tough on sentencing laws that dramatically increased the problem of mass incarceration in this country. And then, in the last 2 years, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee have been outspoken pushing for the rollback of some of those policies. So it's not cut and dry. And that means, you get people like Bernie Sanders having to figure out, oh crap, how do I talk about this? And it's,
The one thing I want to point out on this, I don't see criticism or disruptions like this stopping if, say, Sanders were endorsed by a really liberal African American lawmaker like Keith Ellison or something, who I think has said.
I feel like he's keeping his powder dry, right?
Yeah, but yeah. He's done a wink and a nod toward.
Yeah.
Sanders. But anyway, I think this is how protests and political pressure should be made, I think, because it is, we don't care about someone saying you're okay and giving you the thumbs up. We want to see you talk about this more. We want more frequency on this issue.
Right.
But the activists also say that we want to hit all the candidates on this. Good luck hijacking a stage with Hillary Clinton's security detail.
Yeah,
all
no right. Kidding.
I would,
Yeah, Godspeed.
I'm not, yeah.
Good luck.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the state of the race right now, I guess.
I think so. I think that sums it up pretty good.
All right, Betsy. Well, now it's time to get on to a day of reporting.
Cool.
All right, well, as always,
good delightful seeing. As always.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Goodbye, Blogging Heads listeners. Next time.